All right, ready to dive deep. Today we're tackling something you use every single day, but probably don't think much about: operating systems.
And trust me, once we unpack this, you'll see your devices in a whole new light. You sent over that Wikipedia article. Pretty dense stuff. So we're here to break it down no matter your tech level.
Exactly. So first things first, what is an operating system? It's like the behind-the-scenes manager of your computer, making sure everything runs smoothly.
Unsung hero, really. Think of it this way. Every time you open an app, stream a video, even just save a file, it's the operating system doing the heavy lifting, coordinating all those complex processes and making it look easy.
So we're talking serious multitasker here. The Wikipedia article calls it system software. Sounds kind of official. What's that even mean in practice?
Basically, it's the foundation. Everything else is built on top. It manages all the computer's resources, the processor, memory, storage, and it provides the platform for all your applications to run.
Okay, starting to get the picture. But why should we care so much about something we rarely even see directly? It's not like we're staring at lines of code all day.
True, but here's the thing. You experience the operating system every time you interact with your device. It's what makes technology user-friendly. Imagine if you had to manually allocate memory every time you opened a program, or write complex code to connect to the internet.
Okay, yeah, that sounds like a recipe for disaster and a major headache. So the operating system saves us from all that.
Precisely. It acts as this intermediary, right?
No.
Between you and all that hardware, translates your clicks, your taps, your commands into something the computer can actually understand, like having a personal assistant who speaks both your language and the complex language of the machine.
I like that analogy, but it's not just one assistant, right? We're talking a whole team of specialized software working together, kind of like different departments in a company.
You got it. And just like a company has different departments for different functions, operating systems have core functions, those essential tasks that keep things running smoothly.
So, what are some of these core functions? Give us the inside scoop.
One of the most critical is resource allocation. Think of the OS as a traffic cop, directing the flow of information resources between all these different programs vying for the same CPU time, the same memory. Ever wonder why your computer slows down when you have a million tabs open?
Don't judge my tab management, but yes, sounds painfully familiar.
That's the OS struggling to allocate resources efficiently, trying to give each program its fair share, but with so many demands, things can get sluggish.
So it's all about balance. Speaking of balance, the Wikipedia article mentioned a bunch of different types of operating systems. It's not one size fits all, is it?
Absolutely not. Just like you wouldn't use a scooter to haul a trailer, different computing tasks need different types of operating systems. For example, there are multi-computer operating systems designed for those massive data centers, cloud computing environments where you've got hundreds, even thousands of processors working together.
That is some serious computing power. What's different about those operating systems?
Efficiency is key. Think about it, if you have to process enormous amounts of data, you don't want the OS to be a bottleneck.
Yeah.
So these systems are optimized for speed, minimal data travel time between processors.
Makes sense. Time is money, especially when we're talking big data. So, what about systems where computers aren't physically in the same place? Like, what about the internet?
Ah, yes, the interconnected world of distributed systems. This is where it gets really interesting. We're talking systems where multiple computers, potentially scattered across the globe, are working together as one. Think online banking, global supply chains, even something as simple as sending an email.
It's kind of mind-blowing how interconnected everything is these days. So, how do operating systems handle that complexity?
In these cases, we have specialized software called middleware that helps keep things running smoothly. Middleware, it acts like a kind of intermediary between the different computers in this distributed system, ensuring the data is shared correctly, synchronized correctly.
So, even though the computers might be miles apart, they can still work together seamlessly thanks to the OS and this middleware. Amazing. But it's not just these massive computer networks that rely on operating systems, is it?
You're right, operating systems are everywhere. In fact, some of the most common ones are the ones we rarely even think about. The ones embedded in devices we use every single day.
Wait, you mean like my toaster has an operating system?
Well, maybe not your toaster
Yeah.
yet, but your microwave, your smart refrigerator, even your car, they all have what we call embedded systems. Highly specialized operating systems designed for very specific tasks.
So while I wouldn't expect to be browsing the internet on my microwave anytime soon, it still needs a dedicated operating system to function.
Exactly. And these embedded systems, they're often far more stripped down, far more efficient than the operating systems we use on our computers and smartphones. They don't need all the bells and whistles because their job is very specific.
That makes sense. Like comparing a Swiss Army knife to a scalpel, right? Both are tools, but one is designed for a very, very specific purpose.
Great way to put it. And just like that Swiss Army knife has different tools for different tasks, the world of operating systems has different types for different computing needs. We've got systems for speed, systems for interconnection, systems for specialized tasks, and they all play this crucial role in our increasingly digital world.
This is already more than I ever thought I'd know about operating systems, and we're just getting started.
We've only scratched the surface. In the next part of our deep dives, we'll be taking a closer look at the core components that make up an operating system. Trust me, it's fascinating stuff.
Can't wait to uncover more of these hidden technological marvels. We'll be back with part two after a quick break. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back. Last time we were exploring that vast landscape of operating systems. Who knew there were so many?
Each with its own unique purpose. From those powerhouses managing global networks to the tiny systems embedded in our everyday devices.
It's incredible to think about all that happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But today, let's zoom in even closer. We talked about the what of operating systems. Now let's get into the how. What are those core building blocks that make all this possible?
At the heart of every operating system, you'll find the kernel. If the operating system is the brain, the kernel is like its most vital part, ensuring everything runs smoothly, securely.
Okay, so the kernel is like running the show. What kinds of things is it responsible for on a day-to-day basis? Well, for starters, it's the ultimate authority when it comes to security.
Yeah.
It acts like this really selective bouncer, you know, deciding which programs have access to which resources, like memory or the hard drive, prevents conflicts, keeps those unruly programs from crashing the party for everyone else.
So the kernel is all about keeping order, maintaining peace in the digital world. But there's more to it than just playing security guard, right?
Oh, absolutely. The kernel is also responsible for managing the computer's memory, that precious RAM that keeps everything running smoothly. It's constantly juggling demands, making sure each program has enough memory to function without, you know, hogging resources from others.
Memory management sounds like a tough job, especially with how we use computers these days. I mean, it's not uncommon for me to have like dozens of tabs open while streaming music and trying to edit photos. How does the kernel keep up?
That's where things get really clever. The kernel uses this technique called virtual memory, which is kind of like a magic trick, making your computer think it has more RAM than it actually does.
Okay, now you've got my attention. Magic tricks in my computer. Tell me more.
Imagine this. You're working on a huge jigsaw puzzle, right? But your table is only so big. You wouldn't spread out all the pieces at once. You'd keep some in boxes and bring them out as needed.
That's a great analogy. So virtual memory is like having those extra boxes for the puzzle pieces.
Exactly. The kernel temporarily swaps data that's not actively being used from your RAM to your hard drive, which has a much larger capacity. Then, if you need to access that data again, the kernel swaps it right back into RAM. Makes it seem like you have this endless supply.
That's incredible. So even if I have a million things going on, virtual memory helps prevent my computer from like having a meltdown.
Precisely. One of those key innovations that allows modern computers to multitask so effectively.
Speaking of multitasking, let's talk about another critical component, the file system. It's like the organizational wizard of the OS, right? Keeping all my files, all my folders in order so I can actually find things.
You got it. Imagine your computer's storage is this massive library. Without a good cataloging system, it would be impossible to find anything. The file system is that catalog. It creates a hierarchical structure, you know, directories, those folders you're used to seeing, all to store and retrieve your data efficiently.
So instead of me like wandering aimlessly through a maze of data, the file system provides the roadmap to find exactly what I'm looking for. But how does it actually find that needle in the digital haystack when I need it?
The operating system, it assigns each file a unique identifier, like a digital fingerprint. When you click on a file, the OS uses that identifier to quickly locate it on your hard drive or SSD.
It's like having a personal librarian who knows the exact location of every single book in the library.
And to speed things up even further, the OS uses this technique called caching.
Caching? That sounds familiar. Doesn't that have something to do with making things faster?
Exactly. It's like keeping frequently used books on a special shelf within easy reach. The OS does something similar. It stores frequently accessed data in this special area of memory called the cache, making retrieval much faster the next time you need it.
So it's all about optimizing performance, making my digital life smoother. I'm really starting to appreciate all the work that the kernel and the file system are doing behind the scenes.
They're the unsung heroes of our digital lives, really.
Yeah.
But there's one more crucial component we need to discuss: interrupts. These are like urgent messages that demand the operating system's immediate attention, whether it's from hardware or software.
Interrupts. So like a fire alarm for my computer. What kind of situations trigger these urgent messages?
Think of it this way. Hardware interrupts are like external events that need immediate action. Could be something as simple as, you know, pressing a key on your keyboard, clicking your mouse, or a signal from your printer saying it's out of paper.
So it's the hardware's way of saying, hey, OS, I need you to handle this right now. And what about software interrupts? Are those like internal memos within the system?
Exactly. A software interrupt might occur when a program encounters an error, like that dreaded blue screen of death, or when it needs to request more resources from the OS, like additional memory.
It sounds like the OS is constantly bombarded with these interrupt requests, big and small. How does it handle them all without getting overwhelmed?
The kernel has a very sophisticated system for prioritizing and handling these interrupts. Think of it like a triage nurse in a busy ER, you know, quickly assessing the urgency of each case and directing traffic accordingly.
Wow, that's quite the balancing act. We've covered a lot of ground here, from the kernel's role as security chief and memory manager to the organizational prowess of the file system, and then the interrupt-driven nature of the OS. It's amazing to think all this is happening every time we use our computers.
And we're just scratching the surface. In the final part of our deep dive, we'll explore the critical topic of OS security. How these complex systems protect our data and keep us safe in this increasingly interconnected world.
Can't wait to dive into the world of digital fortresses and cybersecurity. Stay tuned for the thrilling conclusion of our operating system deep dive. We're back! And things are about to get serious. We've explored the inner workings, those core components of operating systems. But now it's time to talk security.
Rightfully so. I mean, in today's digital world, operating system security, more crucial than ever. We're entrusting our lives to these systems. Our personal data, financial information, understanding how it's all protected is paramount.
So how do operating systems keep our digital lives safe? It's like a digital Wild West out there.
You're not wrong. But like any good fortress, a secure operating system, multiple layers of defense. One of the foundational principles is this idea of the CIA triad: confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Don't worry, it's got nothing to do with spies. Though it sounds like it could.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Break down the CIA triad for me.
Gladly. So confidentiality, that's all about preventing unauthorized access to your data, like having a really strong lock on your front door. Keeps those prying eyes out of your business. The OS does this through things like user accounts, passwords, and then more sophisticated techniques like encryption.
Makes sense. Don't want just anyone poking around in your files.
Yeah.
So what about integrity? What does that mean in this context?
Integrity? That ensures your data remains accurate, trustworthy. Preventing unauthorized modifications or tampering. Think of it this way. You wouldn't want someone sneaking into your bank account and changing your balance, right? The OS has mechanisms to detect and prevent that kind of tampering.
Okay, that's reassuring. And lastly, we have availability.
Does that just mean making sure my computer turns on when I press the power button?
Well, it's a bit more nuanced than that. Availability means ensuring that your system and your data are accessible to you, the legitimate user, whenever you need them. It's about preventing those annoying denial of service attacks that can bring everything to a grinding halt.
Ah, so keeping the system up and running smoothly, even when it's under attack, that's essential these days with how much we rely on our devices. So how does the OS actually achieve all this? What tools does it use? One key strategy is isolation. Remember how we talked about the kernel managing resources, preventing programs from interfering with each other? Well, that same principle applies to security.
Right. Like each program gets its own little sandbox to play in.
Precisely. By isolating different processes, different users, the OS limits the potential damage if one part of the system is compromised, like containing a fire to one room.
Damage control? Smart. Are there other ways the OS plays defense?
Absolutely. The OS also acts as a gatekeeper, controlling access to sensitive resources. Like, think of it like a strict bouncer at a club, only granting access to those with the proper credentials.
No sneaking in through the back door. But what about those vulnerabilities we hear so much about? The flaws that hackers can exploit?
Yes, vulnerabilities. They're an unfortunate reality in software development. Even the most skilled programmers, they make mistakes. And those mistakes can create openings for attackers to exploit.
So it's like a constant arms race then, between the OS developers trying to build secure systems and the hackers trying to find ways to break in.
It's a great analogy. The good news is OS developers are constantly working to identify and patch these vulnerabilities. Security updates are crucial for this reason. But it's also important to be aware that new threats, they're constantly emerging.
So even with all these safeguards, there's still a level of risk. What can we, the everyday users, do to protect ourselves?
That is the question everyone should be asking. The reality is, we place a tremendous amount of trust in these systems, these invisible systems. Being aware of the potential risks, practicing good cybersecurity hygiene, crucial.
What kind of things should we be doing? Besides, you know, having a strong password, of course.
Strong passwords are a great start, but also be cautious about the links you click, the files you download, the software you install. Keep your OS and your applications updated, those security patches. They're there for a reason.
So it's about being proactive, informed. Knowledge is power, even in the digital world.
Exactly. The more you understand about how operating systems work and the threats they face, the better equipped you'll be to navigate this digital landscape safely.
Well, this deep dive has been truly eye-opening. We've journeyed from those core components of operating systems all the way to the front lines of cybersecurity. Never realized how much complexity is involved in just keeping our digital lives running, you know, smoothly and securely.
It's a testament to the ingenuity of the developers, the ever-evolving nature of technology. And remember, the best way to stay ahead of the curve is to stay informed, stay curious, never stop learning.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of operating systems. Until next time, stay curious.